Blog Talk Radio.
Good evening, everybody, and welcome once again to the 40 Scenes Fire American Soccer Show. Once again, special edition of the 40 Scenes Fire American Soccer Show, talking about the fourth round of the Lamar Hunt U.S. Open Cup. And once again, when we get to the fourth round, that only means one thing. Major League Soccer teams are involved, and Major League Soccer teams are getting ready to have some fun and going through. First things first, thank you very much for your patience as the regular show on the iTunes got the situation fixed up. So now that everyone can download the regular show from this past Monday night, episode number 376 of the 40 Scenes Fire American Soccer Show. So you can download it on iTunes and of course, maybe I'd get TuneIn or Spreaker, anywhere you can download my show, and you can go ahead and take a look and listen and have some fun. And don't forget about this show as well tonight as we continue to discuss the great games that was in the fourth round of the Lamar Hunt U.S. Open Cup. And let me just say this. Once again, the fourth round does not disappoint. The fourth round clearly doesn't disappoint when we get to talk about and enjoy talking about these great games that happened this past Tuesday, Wednesday night. We got some doozies, of course, and we got some unbelievable moments and destructions and some fantastic penalty kick shootouts that we never really expected. And we got some cup sets as well. We got some cup sets. Some fantastic cup sets, of course. We'll discuss some of them, and it's just been unbelievable what we have seen from these games going on in the Open Cup, and especially when you see a club like Sacramento Republic, who has been a very good and dominating USL side in the Western Conference. And what do? They just take on the four-time Open Cup champions in the Seattle Sounders, and they defeat them 2-1. They just edge them 2-1, and it's just been unbelievable to see what is going to happen when they move on into the next round. And, of course, they will be taking on LAFC in that fifth rounder that was just recently drawn. And let's also give credit to some of these teams, these amateur teams that gave it their all, and just went out there and played their hearts out. North Texas Rayados, once again, they start in the opening round. They get to round four after some solid competition, especially FC Wichita, that has done some great things in the MPSL. And for North Texas Rayados, once again, they took on a Houston Dynamo side that was a little more hungrier, definitely better, and they didn't take them lightly. And the Houston Dynamo go out there, and they just put on a clinic, and they take out Rayados by a final of 5-0. So you just have to say they gave it their all. They gave it their all, but the Houston Dynamo were better on the day. And to be fair, once again, the only amateur side that has taken a lead on a MLS side, yes, once again, last year in the fourth round, Christos FC of Maryland, just outside of Baltimore, just outside of Boyd's, they are the only ones that have taken a lead on an MLS side. And even though it went 1-1 at half, towards the end of that second half, the last 15 minutes of regulation, DC United just basically opened the floodgates and took out Christos FC. So there's nothing much more you can say or do on that one. But still, though, at least Christos FC can still say that they are just the only side in the lower levels, more even the lower levels, in the amateur levels of American soccer, where they did take on, had a lead. Yes, they lost the lead, but still, though, they had a lead on DC United. And once again, you can still go to YouTube and look up Christos FC goal U.S. Open Cup on DC United, or type in Mamadou Konsa, because once again, if you can get all the different angles, if you can get all the different subjects, like from ESPN, Scott Van Pelt, Damon Amendolara from CBS Sports Radio, just unbelievable what they're talking about. And hopefully we can talk some more about these sides going forward as well. So just great stuff to talk about, wonderful stuff to talk about, and we'll get into it as, you know, as much as we can. DC United, North Carolina FC, that looked like that could have just been a 1-0 victory for DC United in the capital city over at Boyd's, Maryland. And then here comes Ian Harkes, who gets the opening goal around the 25th minute. And then all of a sudden, North Carolina FC has some hope. They have some hope. Marios Lomas, who was able to find the equalizer on a rebound shot where he just made a quick turn, took it all one time, beat Usted to make it 1-1, and that forced extra time and nothing in extra time, which went to penalty kicks. And then unfortunately for North Carolina FC, they missed twice. DC United only missed once, but still though, you miss twice in the penalty kick shootout, it's not going to be good. It's not going to be in your favor. And at the end of that, that's all you can say. It was just really tough for North Carolina FC. I thought that they're going to try and do a cup set themselves until you get to the penalty kick shootout. And when you have that opening miss, that's going to bring a lot of issues with the other kickers coming in. How about Miami United? No shame in losing to Orlando City. They hosted Miami United. They hosted that match. And basically, they tried their best. That's all you can ask for. They did so well in the opening rounds from 1 through 3. But once again, Orlando City knew they had to be better. They had to prove that they were the better side, and they did so by taking that game seriously. And it's just been 1, 2, 3, and you're done. 3-0 Orlando City over Miami United in this situation. You do feel bad, though, for a club like the Richmond Kickers, proud club, Le Calishaw, who is, he's been through everything in Richmond as a player and as a manager. Being a part of the situation with Richmond Kickers, and you just have to say that it's not so bad getting beat against a club like the Philadelphia Union, who also take the Open Cup seriously. And Richmond Kickers, and then they just fall. They got demolished. 5-0 Philadelphia Union. I mean, that's the type of game. That's the type of game that you're going to see Jim Curtin play. And, of course, bringing in some players from the Bethlehem Steel of the USL, it just goes and shows and proves that when you got some solid players going out there and they're going to be out there and doing some damage, then that's going to be absolutely fantastic. Jack Elliott with the opening goal in the 3rd minute. David Akam converts a penalty in the 27th minute. Anthony Fontana in the 44th, and then Marcus Epson, first half stoppage time, and then Jay Simpson, early goal in the second half to make it 5, and you knew it was that was it. You knew that was over with. And there you go. Philadelphia Union moving on to the 5th round, and of course later on we will talk about the next matches or shall I say towards the end of the broadcast, we'll talk about the next round of matches in the Lamar Hunt U.S. Open Cup. And once again, it's just a situation with Richmond that they had their own run themselves and they just ran into a brick wall towards the end. Well, when you run into a bulldozer like the Philadelphia Union, well, it's a lot worse, isn't it? And let's also talk about some of these other great games. I mean, once again, sometimes the draw can be very predictable, unfortunately, when you get to these fifth rounds. Like I said before, I was not expecting to see the 8 groups of 4 in these regional draws. I just felt that it was not good. I expected to be a little bit different. Unfortunately, it wasn't. And there you have it. But once again, it's a situation where, you know, you just have no choice. You know, this is what it is. And I understand they're trying to help cut the cost. But what you would like to see is maybe a little bit more of an open blind draw. More open of a blind draw, a little bit bigger, maybe a little bit better. And I'm not saying it's got to be, you know, down the road across the board and all that stuff. But, you know, you wouldn't mind a little something different. A little more potluck, you might say. And I know it's hosting rights that also get involved. But, you know, I feel like if you're going to mix it up a little bit and mix up how it's going to be drawn, I think that should be the best way to go. But once again, until U.S. Soccer and the Open Cup Committee wants to change things up, you know, when we get to that bridge, we'll cross it. So that's all I can say. And, of course, Fresno FC losing to the expansion side, LA Los Angeles FC, 2-0 over at Bank of California Stadium. That's the situation you're going to handle, because even though in that sense, is it a cup set? Is it not a cup set? And if you think about it, yes, it's Bob Bradley. Yes, he has a better roster. So you would have to say if Fresno would have done the impossible, I could see that as an upset, even though I would still believe that if it's an expansion side in MLS, like a real expansion side, I wouldn't have called it an upset at all, because they're just putting the team together. As long as the team in the USL has played a lot longer than an expansion side in MLS, and I'm talking about a real expansion side, not what, you know, they've been doing with FC Cincinnati and what Nashville's going to happen and all that stuff. So if you think about it, when the David Beckham Miami MLS team comes into play, and they're going to be in their first Open Cup themselves, and if they take on a team like maybe the Charleston Battery, maybe a team like, FC Cincinnati, because they're going to come to the league next year. But if you talk about a team like I said before, you know, maybe, you know, it's really tough to think real all these teams. Like North Carolina FC, there you go. Like a North Carolina FC, who's been around for a long, long time, and you're being drawn against David Beckham's Miami MLS side. Well, it's not a real upset, because it's their first year. And we'll see what happens when they do, you know, when they find the players and everything. But still, though, I just feel like that's not a real upset. If it's an expansion side coming into MLS, a real expansion side coming into MLS, and it's their very first year. So, and that's just my opinion and how I see these things progressing. And once again, great job, FC Golden State Force. You know, they did the best they could, and sadly for them, LA Galaxy takes them out 3-1, which you knew they were going to. Like I said, Portland Timbers defeating San Jose Earthquakes 2-0. And Atlanta defeating Charleston 3-0. So at the end of the day, and at the end of you know, that match, you're just going to have to expect that, and you're just going to have to go forward and, you know, get ready for the next time you can try and get into the Open Cup and make a run. Well, ladies and gentlemen, tonight, great show for you. In recorded interviews, I have Jeff Reuter from The Athletic in the Minnesota department talking about Minnesota United's nil-nil draw, and then winning it in the penalty kick shootout 3-1 over FC Cincinnati. I have Guillermo Rivera from Fire Confidential, as well as The Athletic in the Chicago section. We'll talk about Louisville City upsetting the New England Revolution, and at the same time, New York Red Bulls destroying New York City FC once again in the Open Cup, this time 4-0. But we got to go to Nashville, Tennessee. And it was a moment where you knew that once Gary Smith had the Colorado Rapids in his crosshairs, that he wanted to do something special and he wanted to get a big, big upset against this MLS side that has had their moments under the sun, but they couldn't do it against Nashville SC. Joining me once again from Golden Goal Nashville, it is Mr. Wes Bowling who joins me. Wes, welcome back, and how are you?
I'm doing wonderfully. It's cup set time in Tennessee, and things are pretty exciting here in Music City.
Absolutely, and you know what? I got to say this. You got to say that, you know, when a team like Nashville SC, and yes, we know they're coming to MLS, if not next year, maybe the year after that, but still, though, Nashville comes to play, you do it at the big, big Vanderbilt Stadium where the college football team plays, and against a major league side, the crowd had to be absolutely up and ready for this.
It was a good crowd. I said this last time, you know, Nashville's still a little further behind in its soccer development process than in Cincinnati, and that's the reason Cincinnati's going to be in the MLS next year, and Nashville's going to wait another year. That said, there were a good 5,000 people at Vanderbilt, not bad for 2 weeks' notice for a market still getting used to the U.S. Open Cup. And the people who were there were present. They made their voices known. The supporter section was strong. There was lots of enthusiasm. They pretty much filled up the allotted space in the stadium that they expected, and they got a good show. You know, Gary Smith told us multiple times before the match that he wasn't out for revenge against Colorado. It had been several years and it was water under the bridge, but you know, it still felt good for him and for this team to knock off an MLS side, even a team like Colorado who's not had a great year.
Absolutely. And, you know, once again, it's a situation for Colorado. You know, they wanted to rest up some players and they want to give other players an opportunity from the reserves. And once again, it must have felt good to see late in the first half, Michael Azira, he accidentally puts the ball in the back of his own net. And, you know, I try to find themes to every Open Cup season. What's the new theme here? What are the themes that we're going to see here that's going to make this Open Cup season special? We've had golazos, that's for sure. I know we've had big rips, and you've seen them yourselves. We've seen, we've always seen a shootout here and there, but we've never seen, like, multiple shootouts in one round, or at least multiple shootouts in multi-rounds. Own goals that lead to winners. And, you know, this year it's been the golazos, but still, though, penalty kick shootouts and even an own goal here or there can still turn the tide.
Yeah, and, it was one of those situations where you fault the defender, but you really have a hard time faulting the defender. Justin Davis, the Nashville left back, played a good cross in on turf. I know Colorado used to playing in MLS stadiums, not really as custom turf as Nashville might be at this point. And it was just a kind of a hard pass that deflected awkwardly off of the defender, and you know, the keeper really had no chance. But if you're Nashville, of course, you take it. Colorado was about 55-60% of possession, but it didn't seem that way. I mean, it seemed very even, and Nashville capitalized on another really wicked cross on a volley by defender Liam Doyle. Later in the match, a timely header by Ropapa Mensah, the super sub, came in, his first touch of the match. He knocked one in the side of the net. So I think, you know, Nashville was fortunate, certainly, on that first goal. But all in all, tonight, they belonged on that field, certainly, with Colorado. And I mentioned, too, you know, the Rapids didn't play every single starter, but they played a pretty strong side with everything really considered. So I think Nashville deserves credit for beating an MLS team that had MLS-caliber talent on the pitch.
Yeah, absolutely. And you know what, Zach McMath, I mean, he's still a capable keeper for Colorado, just unfortunate on the day, especially the friendly fire that went and put the ball in his own net. But for Matt Pickens, you know, many years since leaving MLS, he's done well for Tampa Bay Rowdies. He's doing well right now for Nashville. You know, for him, I mean, that must have felt good to see Matt Pickens have a very, very solid night, even though probably didn't do too much because Colorado never really threatened at all.
Yeah, he didn't face a single shot on target, and there was only one shot that really felt like a threat that went just high up net. Pickens called it one of the easiest games of the year for him, thanks to his defense. And Nashville played quite a strong side. I mean, they've got 3 games in 8 days, so they didn't play everybody, but they played most of their strong stalwarts there in defense. And Pickens, yeah, had a gratifying night. You know, he won a USL Cup there. He won a US Open Cup in Chicago early in his career. So I think he's feeling the magic of the cup a little bit right now after sitting the first 2 matches for C.J. Cochran, the backup keeper, who deserves some time. But he kind of got the feeling that Smith was going to start as main guy in this one, given the chance to play his former team. And then another little nice side note, Kosuke Kimura, who also started on that Colorado U.S. Open Cup team, came on in like the 86th, 87th minute as a late sub. So he got to play against the team for whom he won a title as well. Didn't really factor in that late, up 2-0. They were just protecting the lead. But nonetheless, good storylines all around. Going into it, we talked the other day about how, you know, from a storyline perspective, this was the best possible fourth-round match. And then they got the best possible result out of it.
Oh, no, absolutely. And, you know, once again, you're going to be moving on to the fifth round, and not just Nashville SC is moving on to the fifth round, but, of course, in the same section of the draw, you're going to be taking on Louisville City, who had an amazing run so far in this Open Cup themselves. And, of course, you're going to be going on the road against Louisville City, who had an amazing upset themselves as well against New England Revolution. I mean, you know, what Louisville and Nashville has done so far, and even Sacramento. And I don't even remember Sacramento ever going out of the fourth round and moving on to the next, because they always find a way. I'm not saying it's intentional, but they always find a way to get themselves eliminated after the fourth round match is over. But here they are, along with Nashville and Louisville City, and so far the last 3 lower level standing in going into the fifth round.
Yeah, it's fun to see. And if you had gotten to see Brian Ownby's winner for Louisville City against Revolution, you have, but folks at home too. I mean, it was awesome. It was just an awesome shot, really kind of out of nothing. These two teams know each other well. They've already played twice this year. Both teams won 2-0 on their own home turf. This one's going to be, thankfully for both teams, I think, at the University of Louisville and not at Louisville Slugger Field, which is just, you know, overused as a minor league baseball park and really has the pitch quality has not been there this year. But Louisville has a beautiful, beautiful field. University of Louisville does. So that's definitely advantageous for both teams. And I think we're going to see a great match. I think we'll see 2 strong sides coming out there. Louisville has to then turn around and play on the weekend. Nashville has a little more time after that. So that's nice from that perspective. I think for Gary Smith's team, you're going to see an ambitious squad going up there, knowing the stakes are high. They'll have to go on the road for the quarterfinals if they win. But the whole point of this team, really, Daniel, right now, is to grow awareness of the game in Nashville. Not necessarily to win a cup. Not even to win a USL title, although certainly the players and coaches feel like that's their goal. But the franchise's goal is to build awareness and excitement. So with each additional round, you're educating soccer fans in Music City, you're growing your crowds to other home matches, and you're generating that excitement on a very, very small level, you know, kind of what you saw with the Predators. You know, the excitement grew with each round, and you got fans a little more into it. Now, this team's 20 years behind where hockey is in Nashville. But I think any chance that Nashville can have to grow the sport is going to be really rewarding. That said, I'm sure they would have loved to have played an MLS team in round 5 and gotten even more attention for playing another top-flight squad. But they'll take the opportunity and run with it, and I think it'll be a very tight matchup in Louisville.
Now, I don't want to make you look ahead of Louisville City, obviously, because they're going to be a formidable opponent anyway, and you've already played them no matter what. But still, you know, that quarterfinals position, even though you'll be on the road, there's an opportunity, if Nashville does the deed, that they could face either Atlanta United or a 4-time Open Cup champion themselves in the Chicago Fire. And I know you're going to be taking that trip either to Georgia or Chicago. It's going to be very interesting.
It would be exciting, and Nashville has seen both teams granted, it was preseason friendly, so take that for what it's worth. But they competed against Atlanta in a 3-1 loss, their first ever competitive match, and then they drew with Chicago. So I think, you know, again, that's preseason. So Bastian Schweinsteiger played like 15 hot minutes and knocked over a couple midfielders, and that was that. But that said, I think that there is a lot of excitement around that opportunity, and certainly the team won't be looking ahead, but can't blame the fans and can't blame us in the media world for, you know, taking a good hard look at what that opportunity would be like on the road, more exposure. And then when you get to the quarterfinals, you're talking perhaps national television, depending on how that falls. So another exciting opportunity to build awareness of this team.
Oh, absolutely. And once again, Nashville has already been on the map for hockey. Nashville's already on the map with the National Football League, already on the map with some Gold Cup matches in group stage play. But still, though, I think with local level media, we know how big it is for you guys over there, especially the local media. But if you can get national media to hit to Nashville for a U.S. Open Cup match, I mean, this would be probably the pinnacle in professional sports in Nashville's history.
You know, it's up there in soccer history for sure. I think, you know, you look at what happened with the Stanley Cup final last year and the Predators making that run, the Titans going to the Super Bowl in 1999-2000 season. Those will always stand out to Nashville fans of any sport. But I think when you're looking at what is needed to develop soccer here, you've got a robust fan base. You've got, you know, 50,000 fans nearly for Man City and Tottenham Hotspur playing at Nissan Stadium last year. You're going to have a September 11th match between the U.S. and Mexico at Nissan Stadium. There's a lot of excitement here. I think the United States is recognizing Nashville as a burgeoning soccer hotbed. But if you're able to keep on moving forward in the U.S. Open Cup, it educates people again to that club level and what's being built here. And that's the number one priority that this young franchise that's building kind of behind the scenes toward the MLS wants. Hey, we want fans buying our merchandise, getting used to our brand, building that equity, and then in 2 years when it's time to buy season tickets for MLS side, they're going to be ready to go, and we're going to fill that 27,000-seat stadium right off the bat. I think that's really the focus.
No, it really is. And once again, once that MLS stadium is starting construction, once they're going to break ground, all I ask from you, Wes, is don't steal the shovels.
We will let the appropriate people, unless they want to have media members standing over there doing some digging, and I don't think they will probably ask us. But just in case, we will keep those shovels in the hands of the people who are doing the digging.
That's right. That's right. Look, I don't mind you doing the digging. Just don't take it home.
I would get buried for that, pun intended.
But I got to say this, Wes, though. Nashville, you know, they are really proving to me that their mentality, every single time that they are on the pitch, whether it's at home or on the road in league play, even in Open Cup play, to me it feels like Nashville is definitely going to be one of those sides that is going to prove that they do belong in MLS. And once they get into MLS, I really think they're going to evolve into what Atlanta United has become. We already know what FC Cincinnati has become now. You know, Orlando, what they've become. So, and even with Los Angeles Football Club, you know, even though that's a true, pure expansion team, and nothing against Nashville, of course, but we all know it's the financial promotion, they're already playing, they're coming up. But still, though, I can definitely see a bright future for Nashville in the next year or two.
Well, I agree with you. I think the investment the ownership group has shown so far has indicated they're going to try to build something that's not going to be on the barest of bones budget. They brought in a former Liverpool head guy, Ian Ayer, to run to serve as a CEO. And so he's going to be ramping things up. And, of course, he's used to the highest level of professional soccer and excited about this challenge. I think that investment, more than perhaps any yet, shows how serious this ownership group is going to be. But Ayer even said, look, they're doing great things in Atlanta. We're not going to take anything away from them. But we can't just copy them. We want to do our own thing. So I think they're going to go to places like Atlanta and L.A. and Minnesota to an extent and see what's worked well, and then build their own approach to meet the needs of this market, taking little bits and pieces of what other people have done. But as of now, the focus of building that brand here could not be off to a better start, in my unbiased opinion.
All right, Wes, listen, good luck in the fifth round against Louisville City. We'll see what happens there. And all I can say is that keep on doing what you're doing. Good luck with Nashville SC and the rest of the league action, and talk to you hopefully the next round review show.
Looking forward to it. Thank you for having me.
No problem at all. Thank you very much. Take care.
You too.
All right, that's Wes Bowling of Golden Goal Nash, Golden Goal Nashville, talking about Nashville SC in the USL, and when they're ready to come to MLS, they will be coming to MLS in about a year or two, I believe, so we'll see what happens going forward with that. Next discussion will be a recorded interview with Mr. Jeff Reuter, of course, from Minnesota, covering Minnesota United FC for The Athletic, as well as The Guardian. And, of course, let's not forget, also part of, or probably used to be a part of, 55.1, of course, covering Minnesota United as they have a scoreless draw in regulation and extra time against FC Cincinnati, but they defeat Cincy in the penalty kick shootout 3-1 in four rounds. Here is Jeff Reuter right now.
Feuerstein here, the American Soccer Show, as we will review the 2018 Lamar Hunt U.S. Open Cup, the fourth rounder. And joining me right now is a good friend of mine and a wonderful colleague. He, of course, covers Minnesota United FC for The Athletic, The Guardian, and any other publication he can get his hands on. And that is, of course, Jeff Reuter joining me today. Again, Jeff, welcome back to the show, and how are you?
Doing well, yeah. Thank you. I think it's been maybe over a year, actually, since the last time I was on. I think it was the fire at that point. So,
yes.
Good to be back. And definitely a bit of a strain, actually, last night of finding things that we could that we could talk about from this game. But I will be able to try to fill our time accordingly.
Absolutely. Well, let me get to, FC Cincinnati, they had that big run in the Open Cup last year. They went from the second round all the way to the semifinals. And it was probably the fifth round where FC Cincinnati had that dramatic penalty kick shootout winner over the Chicago Fire. And this time, a dramatic penalty kick shootout, but Minnesota United comes out on top this time.
So when the draw was first announced, first of all, Minnesota United had played Sporting Kansas City for the past 2 years in the Open Cup, and I think that everyone watching the draw just assumed it was going to be another trip to Children's Mercy. So when I saw that they got Cincinnati, first off, it was great because there are new storylines to follow. Second, Cincinnati is actually probably the lower division team I'm most familiar with, besides Nashville, just in the sense of a lot of the players are familiar for the three or four remaining NASL loons, but also for me, having covered the team during the NASL iteration, players like Richie Ryan, players like Nazmi Al-Badawi, players like Tommy Amiobi, a lot of very familiar names there. And so it made scouting this game probably more interesting than the game itself. The professional soccer journalist in me would like to remind you that a 0-0 draw can be an entirely engrossing, fascinating, fun game to watch if there's a lot of beautiful play in between the missed shots. I don't think I can quite report that from this matchup between Minnesota and Cincinnati. I think going into the game, Adrian Heath and Minnesota United put out a fairly close semblance of a best 11. Darwin Quintero, the designated player, was held to give him some rest and save his legs heading into a couple weeks off for the Loons. And other than that, Ibsen and Rasmus Schuler, the porous double eight pivot that the team's been rolling out without much defensive grit, was separated. Schuler is off on international duty with the Finns, and Ibsen is 34, so he was also given a day off. Aside from that, Christian Ramirez started, went the full 120, Miguel Ibarra went the full 120, Michael Boxall. Minnesota went into this one, and you could tell that they wanted to win it. They'd seen how last year teams like the Chicago Fire, like you mentioned, like the Columbus Crew in the round before the Fire, and then Atlanta United and Orlando City against, that was Miami FC on the other side of the bracket, had been caught unaware by the lower division teams and were rolling out their B-sides, the kids. Minnesota United doesn't have an academy. They don't have a lot of kids to choose from, but really went in with the intention to make some noise. Oddly enough, this was a game where it didn't feel like there was a true underdog, and it didn't feel like there was a true favorite, and in particular when you consider the run Cincinnati went on last year, the momentum of being announced as an MLS franchise just a week or two prior, and the fact that Minnesota United is outside of the playoff picture right now, it made for a really interesting matchup.
It really, really did. And I got to say, though, once again, I know it's 0-0 through 90 and the extra 30, but still, though, when you've got a solid goalkeeper like Bobby Shuttleworth in net, he will make some very solid saves. Two of those, actually, stopping FC Cincinnati, even though Spencer Ritchie also stepped up to the plate and he made four big saves against Minnesota. I mean, yeah, I have to say, maybe this was going to go to the shootout. Maybe you didn't, you should have just said, yeah, forget extra time. Let's go straight to the shootout and let's just worry about it then.
You know, I was actually texting someone I used to write with at one of the old sites during the game, and he had said right about the 10th minute, this game's going to penalty kicks. you got the sense that, 15,000, which... the attendance at Nippert Stadium is 15,486, I think.
Mm-hmm.
That's respectable for the lower divisions. I think any USL team would kill to have that figure, but that is a pittance for that Cincinnati market when you consider the 30,000, 40,000 numbers they've been able to hit in the past. And yes, it's midweek. Yes, it was 2 weeks' notice before the game, but still, I think that robbed the building of a little bit of the energy.
Mm-hmm.
You could tell Cincinnati was focusing on the USL, where they're currently first in the East. You saw their best attacker, Manu Ledesma, was left out of the 18 entirely. Their stalwart number 6, Richie Ryan, was left out of the 18 entirely. Their best number 8, Nazmi Albadawi, was off the bench and came in at about the 112th minute just to focus on a penalty kick, which he ended up having saved. It was strange because there was more squad rotation from the lower division side than the MLS side. And I don't know if that's Cincinnati banking on the magic of last year and then also giving the all-too-common refrain around MLS circles, which is, it's just Minnesota. You know, because lately that's been a lot of the trend, is that, yes, if Bastian Schweinsteiger and the then-postseason hopeful Chicago Fire at this time last year are coming to town, we better have our A game ready. Or the Columbus Crew, cross-state rival. Don't know how much longer we're going to get that rivalry. Have to treat it seriously. Minnesota United, for whatever reason, Alan Koch decided to roll out a lineup that had a lot of questionable pieces and a lot of disjointed chemistry, in particular between the two wingers. Jimmy McLaughlin looked a little bit flat. I seem to remember him playing incredibly well last tournament. And then Anthony, I think it's Sassone. I think that's his name, the right winger. He used to be with the Portland Timbers.
Mm-hmm.
Got pulled out of the game tremendously and very easily was frustrated. And you could tell that Brent Coleman and Maximiano were doing work to try to get in his head and neutralize him from doing any damage.
Yeah, I think that's the same argument I think Brian O'Connell had when New England was taking on Louisville City in the fourth round 2 days ago, 2-3 days ago, and you know he felt that they were disjointed as well. Even though they were able to convert twice, so actually convert once and got help with an own goal by Louisville City, but still though they lost 3-2 on that fantastic Brian Ombi goal by Lou City, and they're going obviously into the fifth round. But you know I think that's the one mistake this year I will say that. I would say Alan Koch had for FC Cincinnati, because I think you can definitely say it, and I can say it as well, Minnesota has improved dramatically since last year and since their start for this year, because I can see the Minnesota United has looked a lot better in recent weeks than what people claim or assume that they are.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I would completely agree. Being at the team's training just about every day, last year, you could say there are at least 5 players that just either looked like they didn't deserve to be there or didn't want to be there, and I think 5 is actually a pretty conservative guess of how many of those types there were. It's not the case this year. You know, it looks much more like an MLS roster, which is maybe more of an indictment of last year's build than this year's team. But I think overall there's more talent on that roster, where a team like Cincinnati really couldn't or shouldn't have chosen – shouldn't have assumed that they could have gotten past this Loons team this year with spare parts. You know, players making their first starts, your backup goalkeeper. Yes, he's on loan from Vancouver. Yes, he's a talented prospect, but I mean, you understand, Daniel. Like, it's so hard to be the number two goalkeeper for the entirety of the season, suddenly get thrown into a midweek game after about 11 weeks without playing and be expected to go 120 minutes plus penalties and put in your best performance. I don't know if that was necessarily a recipe for success. I think that was banking on goals coming up top from players who hadn't scored goals yet this year. And once again, when you aren't playing regularly, obviously USL sides don't have USL affiliates, you know, like most MLS teams do. There aren't a lot of opportunities for players to be playing unless they're one of the coach's 11 trusted men. So it's just one of those things that you have to figure out. Cincinnati, of course, next year will be an MLS, and they're going to have their own batch of problems that they'll have to worry about when they're hosting Indy 11 or whoever else that might be. But either way, I mean, you mentioned Bobby Shuttleworth earlier. We talked about goalkeepers a little bit here. It was about the 105th minute, once it was absolutely clear that no team was going to be able to break this down. I think it was deliberate from Minnesota at first to try to take the crowd out of this game, mm-hmm. to try to just play, you know, bunker in, just try to pass the ball around for the sake of passing the ball around. Minnesota United attempted 783 passes over the 120 minutes, which is twice as many passes as Cincinnati got. So when you're holding onto the ball for two-thirds of the game in someone else's stadium, mm-hmm. it does wonders to get a crowd to just turn on their own team, to say, why don't you have the ball? Why are you letting them just dribble around like that? And I think that was incredibly deliberate, and I think that that was actually pretty well drawn up, particularly going into Nippert Stadium coming off the 2017 run. Shuttleworth had a little bit of gamesmanship too, with always trying to point to the referee that the ball was off the spot, try to get into the kicker's head. It worked twice, three times, I think.
Yep.
Cincinnati bafflingly sent all four of their kicks to the lower left-hand corner, but none of them were able to find the corner, or I think one of them might have been, one skewed it off the crossbar to the left, to the shooter's left. Two of them had it saved in the exact same spot by Shuttleworth, and one was able to slide it under Shuttleworth. So I think that that's more form that would need to be worked on. But yeah, it was just that's really that's the entirety of the action. Unfortunately, some standout players from Minnesota, but now they'll turn their sights to Houston in a couple of weeks.
Mm-hmm. And just to go back, I mean, what you were saying before, obviously they wanted to hold on to the ball, and Minnesota dominated possession, 66.1%. in favor of Minnesota United. So whatever game plan Adrian Heath was working on, it did work to a T. And yeah, I have to say Minnesota United kind of FC Cincinnati'd, because this is the same penalty kick shootout winner that FC Cincinnati had against the Chicago Fire. A missed penalty and the rest saved by Mitch Hillebrand last year, and Minnesota United does to FC Cincinnati what FC Cincy did to Chicago last year.
Yeah, and it was interesting because with this whole expansion, will they, won't they, I gained a surprising number of Cincinnati followers waiting for me to pull a Nashville on them. But a lot of them are, you know, were just saying, like, why penalty kicks are so unfair, penalty kicks are such a terrible way. Cincinnati was the better team on the day. And they lost in penalties, and I didn't have the heart to respond to any of them with exactly what you just said, but it was my first thought the entire time, too, Daniel. You look at it, and it's, yes, penalties are cruel. No, penalties are not the best way to decide a game after 120 minutes, but you have to shut the lights off at some point. So, you know, it's live by the penalties, die by the penalties, mm-hmm. all of that. There's a difference between Shuttleworth, who isn't seen as one of the league's five best goalkeepers, maybe even 10 best goalkeepers, but he is universally recognized as being an expert shot stopper. And that calling card in particular is vital once you get into a penalty kick shootout. So I think that was a recipe for success. I think it made perfect sense for Heath to be sticking with Shuttleworth, who had a lot to do in Kansas City, but also, I mean, he's not a roaming goalkeeper. He's not one who's going to be trying to dribble out the back himself. So getting him back off 3 days rest really isn't an issue.
All right, Jeff, thank you very much for your time. I appreciate it. Good luck in the fifth round at Houston. And let's see what Minnesota United can do to advance into the next round of the Open Cup. Thanks a lot.
Not a problem. Anytime.
Jeff Reuter, the Athletic in Minnesota, also The Guardian 55.1, talking about Minnesota United and their advancement into the fifth round after a scoreless draw through regulation and extra time, and then the 3-1 penalty shootout victory over FC Cincinnati. I just want to say to FC Cincinnati, great job trying to make another run. They looked solid against Detroit City FC in the second round. They tried their best against, and they defeated the Pittsburgh Riverhounds in the third round. And then, Minnesota United was the next opponent. They did their best to try and take another lead and try and take out another MLS side, but this time, unfortunately, wasn't meant to be, and we'll see what they will do when they start in Major League Soccer next year in the fourth round of the Lamar Hunt U.S. Open Cup, and who knows, maybe we'll change things up a little bit. Maybe we can change things up a little bit and see what's going to happen when we get to more teams coming to MLS, because once again, with Nashville and Miami coming in, hopefully expansion will stop and we can just leave it the way it is and then move forward. So we'll see what happens on that end. But, I want to talk about that matchup on Tuesday night between Louisville City and the New England Revolution. This was a knock 'em out, drag 'em out fight. This was a battle. This was a moment where you can definitely say that this match was top billing between lower level side Louisville City, who are the defending USL Cup champions, and against the New England Revolution side that has manager in former U.S. national team goalkeeper Brad Friedel. And he is able to go out there to try and give some players an opportunity. A little bit of a mix and a match here and there. But once again, all you can say is that James O'Connor and Louisville City, they came to play. They came to play. And it's just been amazing what we have seen here from this Louisville City side that has absolutely done a magical thing right now. When you watch these streams from U.S. Soccer and to see them participating into this situation, and at the same time, when you see U.S. Soccer, showing that they are caring and wanting to make this tournament what it really should be, just like because everyone else is caring about the tournament and they feel, look, you're going after a trophy. Let's go ahead and let's go for it. Let's fight for it. To see in the first 6 minutes, from the 5th minute to the 11th minute, great goals from Mark Segbers of New England, and then Oscar Jimenez pulls one back in the 11th minute. In my opinion, though, in this match, Brian Ownby is the man of the match with a goal and an assist, but still, though, when you seeing both sides trading goals in the first half, four of them, two for each side. And granted, the second Revolution goal was an own goal by Pat McMahon from Louisville City. Still, though, they're both fighting back and forth, tooth and nail. Even though it looks like maybe second half, maybe the Revolution were looking to just hold on, just draw the thing, get to extra time and win it. Or if there's no winner in extra time, you're going to go and do it in a penalty kick shootout. It looked like it could have been done and dusted for Louisville City when Pat McMahon puts the ball in the back of his own net. And then here comes Cameron Lancaster, who gets a nice ball. He goes short side, and he makes it 2-2. And then you're thinking to yourself, here we go. Now you're thinking to yourself, we're going to have a match here. We're going to have a game. And this is going to be probably one for the ages. in the history of Louisville soccer. And once again, you know, great setup at Lynn Stadium at the campus of the University of Louisville. And once again, U.S. Open Cup matches, they don't disappoint. They don't disappoint at all. And here comes Brian Ownby. He just deflects the ball and puts it in front of him, lets it roll a little bit, and as soon as he gets to the edge of the area, or just inside the edge of the area, he just takes a shot and says, you know what? I'm going to let this baby rip. And that's what he does. He lets that baby rip. Louisville City looking absolutely fantastic. And all you can say is that you got a winner right in front of you. 62nd minute, right across the face of goal. And in certain ways, that's almost the goal that Diego Fagundes scored against the New York Red Bulls last Saturday in league play. Diego Fagundes, he decided to cross-body rip that shot. And Brian Ownby, maybe a little bit better than that, but still, though, he decides to rip it cross-body on Brad Knighton. And there you go. And it splashes into the side netting, and the entire stadium goes absolutely bananas. This is a situation where you have to say that Louisville City, after finally winning their first league championship, you have to say that they are coming in and ready to play. They've come ready to play to take on any competition, whether it's from the USL or coming from Major League Soccer. The stats are unbelievable. Majority of them favor the New England Revolution here, with the exception of shots on target, and of course the shots off target, and the corners, and the crosses. 15-9 shots in favor of Louisville City. 7-4 shots on target in favor of Louisville City. And yes, 8-4 off target, but still, at least you saw Louisville playing this match as they want to get to the final. Just as Wes Bowling says they believe Nashville is an international city when it comes to sports, maybe Louisville wants to feel that way themselves. Maybe, just maybe, Louisville City wants to have that same feeling that Nashville is having. And those two sides are going to face each other in the fifth round after the draw was concluded yesterday on Thursday afternoon. Late Thursday morning, early Thursday afternoon. So all you can really do and all you can really say is that we are having ourselves a heck of an Open Cup so far, and everything that's going on with this Open Cup has been spectacular so far. I've enjoyed it. Yes, we've had some destructions here and there, but still, though, we've seen some of these great cup sets going forward, and this was one of them. Louisville City absolutely doing some major work. Give credit to James O'Connor for laying down the groundwork and turning this club that was originally the USL affiliate of Orlando City. And then all of a sudden, when Orlando City ended that agreement, Louisville City became their own club, which they were anyway. But they became their own club. And look at how well that James O'Connor has basically molded Louisville City into a club he can call his own. That is just tremendous. That is just absolutely tremendous. Pardon me. To see what James O'Connor has done for Louisville City, ever since they got off the ground. At the same time, or maybe a year after Orlando City came into Major League Soccer, it's just been unreal. And it's fantastic. And you're really happy for a club like Louisville City that has done a fantastic job. And very soon, they're going to start constructing their brand new soccer stadium, which will be within the city limits of Louisville. So that's going to be fantastic as well, because while it's great for them to use Lynn Stadium for their Open Cup matches when they're home, and I understand Louisville Slugger Stadium, Louisville Slugger Field, it's a minor league baseball stadium. I understand that's their home games and league play. But sooner rather than later, hopefully get out of there, because, yes, it gets overused a lot because of the minor league baseball team and the Louisville City soccer team being in there. But you still, it's a situation where I understand why it's being used. It's the only place they can use it without having to borrow a bigger stadium for the college football teams that play there, especially University of Louisville that they have. But still, you know, once they build their own stadium, it's going to be tremendous. It's going to be unbelievable to see what we are going to get from Louisville City in the future. Now, I'm not saying they're an MLS candidate to get their own financial promotion and everything, but still, though, if Louisville City ever got an opportunity to go to MLS, if we ever do have a pro rel, I would see them definitely going to the top three and moving up to MLS. I can see that. I can definitely see that, because they've done things the right way. Just like what FC Cincinnati has done. They've done things the right way. And hopefully one day, maybe both sides will be in the same league in the future. But still, give them day after day after day, or one day at a time. Let Louisville City grow into what they're supposed to be and how they're supposed to be. Give them that opportunity to grow. And then, maybe then, we'll see them getting up there. But once again, if they do defeat Nashville SC in the fourth round, and if they do face either Atlanta or Chicago, could you imagine what that matchup could be? Especially against Atlanta. Especially against Atlanta United. Because Nashville, Tennessee, driving-wise, is not that far away from downtown Atlanta, Georgia. And once again, it's a situation where that would be a great matchup, I think, for MLS as well, if Louisville City does come into the play. And it's not just, you know, the rivalry they'll have with FC Cincinnati, but the rivalry that it could have with Atlanta United. And that is where I think would be tremendous. I really think that could be huge for MLS if it ever does happen. And just to take a look at the distance and how long it would take. Fastest route, apparently, from Nashville to Atlanta, it'll be 3 hours and 40 minutes, 248 miles. And this is taking Interstate 24 East and getting to Atlanta using Interstate 75 South. And you have to bypass Chattanooga in Tennessee as well. But I also have to say this. Wouldn't it be great to see a rivalry with Nashville SC and Chattanooga FC? And that's not a far distance. That's not a far distance at all. That's probably half half of getting to Atlanta that way. I mean, you know, taking a look there, that's like an hour and 59 minutes. Taking Interstate 24 East, that would be a pretty good matchup. I know Chattanooga FC is in the NPSL. Nashville will be still in USL and probably moving to MLS soon. But still, though, that would be a great rivalry. I wouldn't mind that, to be honest. I wouldn't mind seeing that. So, you know, you never know. You never know what you're going to get in the Open Cup, and hopefully one day we can see that happen. And it would be absolutely fantastic to get a big-time rivalry, especially in the state of Tennessee, between Nashville and Chattanooga. So we'll see what happens in the future, especially in the Open Cup. It would be great to see what would happen there. After all, we just had a first, local Nashville derby with Nashville SC and Inter Nashville FC. But joining me now, another recorded interview, ladies and gentlemen, Mr. Guillermo Rivera. He covers the Chicago Fire for both Fire Confidential as well as The Athletic in Chicago. So here he is right now on a recorded interview, Mr. Guillermo Rivera. And this is Daniel Feuerstein once again, the Feuerstein's Fire American Soccer Show, as we recap the fourth round of the Lamar Hunt U.S. Open Cup. And joining me right now to talk about the Chicago Fire and that amazing penalty kick shootout against the Columbus Crew, Guillermo Rivera, Fire Confidential, as well as The Athletic Chicago. Guillermo, welcome back, and how's it going?
Good, Dan. How are you?
I'm doing very good. So, this Open Cups, there's always a theme to certain things. There's always weirdness of any Open Cup season. And usually, in this one, it's golazos. But, you know, even penalty kick shootouts get strange and weird at the same time.
That was definitely strange to go through 22 different penalty kick takers and have only two miss up until the last one. It isn't, like you said, it's weird. I think this is only the second time in MLS history that the teams involved in a game have gone down to the goalkeepers having to kick penalty kicks, and it's certainly bizarre to see it. And you see Richard Sanchez maybe earned that win with a little bit of gamesmanship against Logan Ketterer, just kind of making him come after the ball for him on that last kick. But definitely weird to go through that many penalties and that many kicks.
No,
To decide an Open Cup game.
No, absolutely. And I mean, as great as Nikolic is, in the field of play, and usually he does bury his penalty kicks during league play. This is like the second time he's either missed or his shot got saved. I mean, you don't have to go as far as last year against FC Cincinnati, but still, though, he's like 0-for-2 in Open Cup play.
Yeah, that's another bizarre thing. You said he usually buries them, and he's a guy that when he's given a chance in front of the net, he's going to put it away. So him stepping up first, I'm sure the Fire thought, get our striker up there, the Golden Boot winner, and he'll put it away. But soccer and penalty kicks are weird combinations.
Yes, absolutely. They really are. But my goodness, you just got to say that 22 different takers, 11 rounds, so many players being used. It's just you've never, ever seen anything like this before. And then, of course, as you said, when the keepers get involved, it gets very interesting.
Right. And then, the Fire, I thought, played that game to win it. Columbus, I thought, was trying to get through it. They left Federico Higuain on the bench. Giassi Sardis didn't get in. The Fire, Bonovich brought out Schweinsteiger. McCarty came back from injury to play in this game. Katai all came in late in the second half. So I think the Fire went into this game knowing that, we've got to rest some guys and rotate some guys for regular season play. But we want to go after this, and I think Columbus went into this game looking to get through it with the reserves and really looking to be focused more on regular season play. But that's not uncommon for what's for the tact Berhalter has taken over the last several years. Regular season has taken more of a forefront for him than U.S. Open Cup play has. But I think the Fire are proud of their history, and they're well aware that the fan base wants to see them be successful in U.S. Open Cup play, and I think they played it that way on Wednesday.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely, and of course, leave it to the keeper, stopping the keeper at the end, like you said earlier. Richard Sanchez stops his counterpart in Logan Ketterer, and that must have been a big moment. Did it look like Ketterer knew where he wanted to go, or did he have some indecision before he walked up to it? Did you see from your vantage point?
It looked like he knew where he wanted to go with it, but like I said, that after Sanchez hit his penalty, he kind of dangled the ball out in front of Ketterer and made him walk toward him in the goal mouth before. He was able to step to the spot, then he dropped it in front of him to make him chase after it. So I don't know if that played any part in making Ketterer think about what he was going to do a little bit more, or whether or not Sanchez just guessed right in stopping his shot. But I think it was something kind of to add to the drama and the circumstance of the moment by Sanchez making Ketterer come out and get the ball. On the 6-yard line.
Yeah, absolutely. And once again, in regulation time, of course, Nikolic, he gets both goals. I should say one in regulation, one in extra time. Nikolic gets both goals for the Fire. Martinez got one early in the 10th. And then Adam John, and listen, Adam John, you know, he'll always find a way to bite your team in the rear end. When you think you have a lead, when you think you're going to get a point out of it, Adam John just comes out of nowhere and he just buries one by you, and he gives you a look what I just did to you.
Yeah, and there was a little bit of a, I don't know if it was a mix-up, it looked like the Fire were zonally marking on that corner kick, and the crew took a short corner out of near the end of the game there, and they were able to find Jan in the middle of the field in front of, I think it was Campbell, and Schweinsteiger might have involved in the play. Nikolic, I think, was there as well. That's kind of been an issue for the Fire on and off over the last couple of years, is whether or not you should go to zonal marking, it's man marking and corner kicks, and kind of bit them in the end there. They came away with a win against, like I said, a crew B team, but I think their next opponent in Atlanta is going to be tough when they get through.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, Atlanta is always going to be a tough opponent, whether it's in league play or in Open Cup play. They always find a way to just go out there and take down your opponents, and or take down their opponents, I should say, and go forward. Now, I have to ask this question. Did Panovic look concerned? I took a look at the feed at the stream while I was watching the Red Bulls pile on top of New York City FC, as always, at Red Bull Arena during their Open Cup game, whether it's the first team or the second team. Did it look like Panovic got a little worried out there, wasn't sure about tactics, or just was he worried about the crew trying to surge back into this match?
It's tough to tell from watching an online stream, obviously, with Mares. You don't get to see his reaction or, you know, what his interaction is on the sideline, other than, you know, the cutaways, very brief cutaways. But he's a guy that's pretty active on the sideline. He's usually up and giving instruction or getting a mouthful into the ear of before the fourth referee, but he's usually pretty active. He's usually up, being very vocal. So I don't know if you can take that as being worried about what's going on in the field. But I would imagine that he wasn't happy with that tying goal from Jan late.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, to me, it looked like he was nervous. I don't know why. I mean, you know, you got a good squad out there. I know you said they needed some help here and there before the season got started, but it looks like, you know, they seem to be, I guess, they're starting to get back into form, it looks like. But, you know, you'd know more than I would, obviously. But still, to me, it looks like maybe this Open Cup run could help them out when the league season's not going well for them.
Yeah, I think Open Cup is their best chance to win anything this year. If they want a chance at silverware, I think Open Cup is where they're going to find it. It's going to be very difficult to get it in the playoffs, considering who the top four teams in the Eastern Conference are, and considering that Toronto FC at some point is going to make a run. So there's really only one spot available for them to get finished above the red line, and beating New England's obviously going to be a big game for them on Saturday.
You know, I think the Fire still, even with McCarty back, even with Solignac back, they'll get some guys back in Michael DeLeo and Georgi Mihailovic in August. But even with those guys all back on the field, I don't believe that they're a playoff team without some more additions here coming up. They need another center back. They need a playmaker, obviously, which has been an issue for several years now. And they could probably use a little bit of help wide in the attack. So, but, you know, whether or not they're a contender, I don't think so. I think they'll, because it's MLS and they are talented enough to make a run at that sixth spot, I think they'll remain close enough. But I don't see that they're a playoff team at this point.
Yeah, I see. But I want to ask you this. When the draw was conducted on Thursday, I mean, you have to say, I'm not trying to put the Fire to look ahead of the of their next opponent, which will be Atlanta United, but
yep.
You got Louisville City and Nashville as the next, one of those two will be the next opponents if the Fire does find a way to defeat Atlanta United in the Open Cup. You know, what do you expect if it does happen when you see a USL side as the possible next opponents if the Fire does reach the quarterfinals?
Well, yeah, I mean, you have to think you can beat a USL team at home. In that situation, I would imagine they'll field a pretty strong side if they get that far. But like I said, getting past Atlanta in Atlanta isn't going to be easy, obviously. You know, Atlanta didn't play Almiron, they didn't play Joseph Martinez on Wednesday night in their U.S. Open Cup game, but they didn't need it. They won 3-0 against the USL team. Both teams, Atlanta and the Fire, are going into Wednesday, Saturday games here for the next 2 weeks. So I'm not sure what the actual date has been announced, whether it's June 20th or June 16th. But either way, those will be Wednesday, Saturday combination games for both teams. So it'll be interesting to see how seriously Martino takes it heading up into that game. Because they've got important games coming up against Columbus and New York City FC as well, but as far as jockeying for position at top of the East. So it's going to be difficult for the Fire if Martino pays some attention to U.S. Open Cup, and I would imagine he will with home game in front of them, but they'll want to make their best effort.
Now, I want to ask you this. Where have you ever seen, because this is what happened with the Red Bulls, New York City FC only had nine players, American players, on their roster. The rest are internationals. And you know the roster rules for the Open Cup as well as I do. You can only have 5 internationals. If they don't count as international because of a green card, then obviously you get spared a position. But 3 of the 9 players were goalkeepers, including Sean Johnson. Did you ever see that in an MLS side in an Open Cup game? And at the same time, I don't think the Fire has ever done that.
No, the Fire have, through the course of their history, taken Open Cup pretty seriously. Obviously, they've got 4 Open Cup trophies and made it into the semifinals a couple of times. On top of that, I made it into a final a couple of years ago. But I remember a few years ago, the Red Bulls, and it wasn't because of international absences. I believe they came into a U.S. Open Cup game at Toyota Park with only 14 guys on their roster, and Hans Bakke didn't even bother to show up.
Yeah, I remember that.
So I'm not sure if any other teams have had real issues with fielding a complete 18 because of internationals, but there are teams that just don't take it as seriously and don't even bother bringing a full 18. So I wouldn't say it's uncommon for some of these teams not to take it as seriously as they should.
Yeah, very true. Very true. Well, we'll see what happens. Well, Guillermo, good luck with Chicago against Atlanta for your 5th round matchup, and hopefully Chicago can move on and face that USL winner in the quarterfinals.
Yep, anytime, Dan.
And that is, of course, Guillermo Rivera, Fire Confidential, as well as from The Athletic in Chicago. And once again, it is absolutely great to see Guillermo Rivera joining me again in a recorded interview. And once again, it's a great situation if you're a Chicago Fire fan, because once again, you're looking for that 5th Open Cup championship. And of course, Chicago and Seattle. They are both level on trophies. Of course, let's not forget Bethlehem Steel is a five-time Open Cup champion, not, of course, the newer version of them, the original Bethlehem Steel Corporation. And, of course, Maccabi SC in Los Angeles, they are also a five-time Open Cup champion. So we haven't gotten to that level yet with an MLS club at the moment, but still, though, those clubs that do take the Open Cup seriously, that's why you love to read about them and love to discuss them. So let's go ahead and talk about the New York Red Bulls 4-0 destruction over New York City FC. This is the Red Bulls portion of the Open Cup review show here in round four. You know, it's not so much you're tooting the horn of the New York Red Bulls Academy. It's not so much that, you know, what they are believing in over there in Harrison. But when you watch what they have done with these players coming from not just the academy, but bringing in players into this organization from the academy to the PDL to the USL and now the MLS level, the seamless transition is just breathtaking. You've seen that when you saw Ben Mines getting an opportunity against the Portland Timbers in the season opener after the Red Bulls dominated Club Deportivo Olimpia in the round of 16 of the CONCACAF Champions League, and how he just was, you know, seamlessly thrown in there, and he made it 1-0 like that. Ben Mines, absolutely just finding himself and becoming a great, great positional player and scoring his first goal in MLS, as well as for the Red Bulls. Then you see in this matchup against New York City FC, where Tim Parker is with the U.S. men's national team along with Tyler Adams in these two European friendlies. And you see Hassan Nadam fitting in. He was playing there for the last 5 years. Ethan Cutler along the right side of the back line. And he does the job as well. Vincent Bezecourt already with this MLS roster. Fantastic. And all you can say is that the future is absolutely bright with the New York Red Bulls. They are winning their matches. They are playing like, you know, this is like nothing to them. It's just old hat. You got new sneakers, that's fine. Make them feel like old sneakers. Get everything together. And then it's boom, 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 boom. The New York Red Bulls take out New York City FC with only 9 Americans on their roster. And we don't know if any of them or any of the international players are green card holders. 5 internationals are allowed on an Open Cup 18-man roster. 5. If a player has a green card, then that absolves them from that 5 international limit. Kamar Lawrence does a job. He has a green card. You're safe. Aurelien Collin has a green card. You're safe. Bradley Wright Phillips has a green card. Well, Bradley Wright Phillips is, you know, you're safe there too, but Bradley Wright Phillips doesn't even see the pitch. And he gets the full 90 minutes off. He's rested, he's ready to go. And there he is. Just sitting back, enjoying a match, not have to worry about a darn thing. That is amazing when you don't need to bring in Bradley Wright Phillips. And then what happens in that matchup? The destruction started early. Second minute, Vincent Bezecourt made it 1-0. Could have been more. This could have been easily 7-0. I'm not just saying it because it's Red Bulls versus New York City FC. I'm saying this because Derek Etienne Jr., who had a very good game for himself, sadly could not put a couple of balls away, which he should have. He could have had a hat trick against New York City FC. I thought they were tactically better. I thought they were their formation was perfect, spot on. Early moments in the second half, leading 1-0 into the halftime. Here comes an opportunity. Mark Schottkowski delivers a fantastic cross from the near side into the middle of the pitch, and then whammo, 2-0. And then it was all over but the shouting as Daniel Royer finally gets his first two goals at Red Bull Arena this year and comes in the U.S. Open Cup fourth rounder. And it's 4-0 for the New York Red Bulls. Alex Mouil with a nice cross, finding Daniel Royer all alone. He goes one-on-one with Brad Stuver. He buries it. Absolutely buries it. And then, Alex Mouil tries to bury one himself. And then it was all over because rebound shot went right to Royer. Open goal, tap it in. 4-0, it's over, say goodnight. So for the New York Red Bulls, it's a 4-0 destruction once again this year. And they move on to the fifth round, getting ready for their next opponent very, very soon. And let's go ahead and play audio now from the head coach of the New York Red Bulls, Jesse Marsh, as he talks about the matchup. And let's also say this as well before we play the audio. Patrick Vieira came into the interview room first. Why was it so easy for the New York Red Bulls to take them out? Because it's really simple. New York City FC does not have a second team. They do not have a USL team. That is a problem when you are trying to give players rest, but at the same time, it's a problem when you're not evaluating players who probably deserve to play in the second team, and that gets that opportunity to play on the first team. And once again, who gets subbed out in the second consecutive match against the New York Red Bulls? David Villa. Threw up the white flag in the 4-0 matchup in league play at Red Bull Arena. You throw up the white flag back at Red Bull Arena in the Open Cup. So all you can say is that the New York Red Bulls right now, they have this club's number once again. There's two more matches left in the league year against New York City FC, but let me just say this once again. Once again, the New York Red Bulls are the reasons why that they have changed the philosophy of this club. They are finding difference makers. They are creating difference makers. And right now, they are on the verge of probably becoming a big-name club for the right reasons, because they're helping the national team develop players. They're probably helping other national teams developing players. And they're just doing the job that they're able to do. And it's pretty damn good, if you ask me. All right, now here is the audio from Jesse Marsh after the 4-0 destruction against New York City FC.
Before we start, just clarification, confirmation from U.S. Soccer. Tomorrow morning there will be a regional grouping of the 16 winners from tonight and a redraw, and then a bracket from the rest of the tournament from there. So 11 a.m. tomorrow, U.S. Soccer is the grouping and draw for the next round of the tournament. Open it up to questions. Please wait for the mic to be passed around. Start with Dylan in the front.
Hey, Jesse. We were just asking Patrick and the kind of correlation with your team as well, where their young players don't have an opportunity, they don't have a second team to be able to get regular minutes. You clearly do. How much of does that help in a tournament like this where you know you've got a big game in the weekend, some guys need to get the rest, and you can still come out, give those guys the minutes that they've played, and get the result you want?
Yeah. That's part of it. Certainly having a second team is good, and it's a good way to develop players, but it's the overall package of what we do. It's not one thing, it's everything. And so, you know, I even challenged the team before the game to use this as a, you know, as a stylistically, there's differences between the team, and it's a derby, and it's a chance for us again to showcase our team and showcase our club and showcase what we do here. And no doubt our players went out and did that. So big sense of pride from performances and from the results, and a big sense of pride to see guys like Hassan Nadam, Ethan Cutler do really well and show that they can handle a game like this. So yeah, I mean, you know, I've said it a lot, I'll say it again, like, we're at the forefront of player development in this country. There's no question that that's where we sit. And so we're very proud. It's another night where we have a good night, and we're very proud of our team and our club.
Yeah. Jesse, two questions. First, Daniel Royer, nothing much since the first Champions League game this year until he broke out on the road. Now he's got two at home. How good is it to see Daniel Royer converting finally for you?
Yeah, it's obviously one of the big positives on the night is Danny gets two good goals and some confidence and keeps building into the season. But, you know, Danny's a big player for us here. And although he hasn't scored at the rate that he has last year, he will. You know, he's gonna keep putting goals together, putting plays together, and keep rewarding himself and the team. So, but from a confidence level, always when goal scorers start getting goals, it's a really good feeling. So yeah, I'm really happy to see Danny get two at the end.
And secondly, scoring first in both halves early, first 2-3 minutes of both
yeah.
halves. How happy were you thinking that maybe here we go again from the league match a month ago?
Yeah. Well, you know, in the first half we score the goal, and then we're, you know, our pressing's off, our passing's off, and for 20 minutes we were doing a lot of dirty running. And that's what we said to them at halftime, is like, listen, these are the things we need to tighten up tactically. Then we need to have guys that want to get the ball when we win it back, otherwise we're going to do a lot of running. And so that was a big key, is tactically rearranging a couple things, making sure that we were understanding what they were trying to achieve, and then encouraging our guys to have more confidence on the ball and to want the ball, and that they had more time than they thought. So the combination of those two things, I felt like helped us in the second half to have pretty good control of the game.
Mark and then Joe.
Jesse, you had mentioned both Cutler and Adam. Can you talk a little bit about your decisions in terms of putting them into the starting 11, and then just mention a little bit more on their play tonight?
Yeah, well, you know, it's a tough stretch for us right now because we're missing a lot of guys, and you know, we have to find a way to prioritize certain things and certain games, but also do it in a way where we're not risking injury, right? Because when I look overall, we know we were disappointed in New England that we didn't perform better, but we know we have a good team, and we know that with our best group that we're really good. So, and one of the ways that you can start to put the season under a little bit of pressure is if you start getting injuries on key guys. So we're happy for the international guys to go away. Hopefully they'll come back in, you know, in good shape and in one piece. And then, you know, making sure that we go after results in this stretch, but we do it in a way that we're not risking, you know, guys getting long-term injuries. So that's a little bit of the balance that we're going through right now. I think, you know, now looking to, we'll try to, we have an idea of what we're going to put on the field on Saturday, but we'll have to evaluate where guys are at physically. Getting Aaron off the field early, getting Kamar off the field early was certainly big.
And then, you know, we'll find a way to really go after Columbus and then do it again in, at home against Seattle.
Jesse, I was wondering if you could just talk a little bit about Shukowski's performance tonight.
Yeah.
He's been out of the lineup for a while and came back and had a pretty big game.
Yeah, I think specifically second half, he was very good. And when we talk about what I've been talking about, you know, guys wanting the ball and to command the game a little bit more with possession, that, you know, I challenge Mark in that because he's a great footballer and he's really philosophically a good player and in every way he's a very good player that has big potential here. But I'm trying to encourage him to have more personality, to take more charge of things that are happening on the field, to now insert himself in the ways that he should. So that was the challenge a little bit at halftime, and then I thought second half he came out and was very good. So overall, really happy to get him 90 minutes, and now he's another guy that, you know, he's gone through injuries and the ups and downs already with us, so we've got to make sure that we manage things and don't push him too much and jeopardize, you know, some good momentum with him.
Here to James.
Coach, you went with two forwards in the game this other than last week, and it seems like the midfield was a little bit lost about a little bit more than usual in that game. Does that play anything into you going one forward today? And moving forward, is that something that maybe you try differently? Or?
Yeah, I mean, you know, we went with two strikers a little bit because we thought that would test their back line and that with the diamond in the midfield that we could compress the field and win little duels in there. I thought first half, actually, the tactics of the game plan in New England were very good. And if we get into halftime, if we don't give up the last play of the half and we get in at halftime, I think we have a very different game there. But, you know, I'm always challenging these guys to understand tactically what we're trying to achieve and then to be able to execute. And for the most part, you know, that game came down to little things and, it, you know, came down to throw-ins and little battles and plays. But still, you know, the comment afterwards wasn't good enough and still feel that way. And then, yeah, I mean, could we have played with one striker? Could we, you know, we could have possibly, we wound up changing in the game eventually once we put Danny on. But I'm still trying to get this team to work through the ability to really be flexible. And we've done a really good job of that. I mean, in the last year, I think we've created that. So, but tonight was good, I thought, with the tactics and formation.
Jesse, two questions for you. You touched on you guys being at the forefront of player development. An example of that is Aaron Long scores a goal today, helped shut down David Villa again. What do you think of his performance today, and how did you and how did he, you know, get to develop him from being a player that went from USL to stand out in the left cornerback?
So, first, a really good performance from Aaron, and he's become a big player around here. And, you know, in nights where it's not the full team. You know, Sean Davis wears the armband, and then Aaron has to become a big leader. So the it's always important to use these moments to help galvanize confidence and belief and for guys to put to practice some of the lessons that we're trying to teach them. So it's not just about Hassan and Ethan. It's about Sean's role as captain, and it's about Ryan continuing to build and Aaron being a big leader back there, and, you know, Derek continuing to grow. So you have to use every moment as a test to try to challenge people to get better and to grow. And ultimately, that feeds into Aaron. When Aaron first came here, we knew he was talented and gifted, right? And we believe firmly that if we can get those kinds of guys and that the mentality's right, the mentality is a big key to players' ability to fit in here. But if we find talented players that have the right mentality, we feel strongly that we can put them into our system, teach them the tactics of how we play, ingrain the habits and reactions of what we want out of the way they play, turn them into Red Bull players, help them think, eat, breathe Red Bull. Okay? And I don't know if I should even say this, but sometimes I call it brainwashing, right? Because when you come here, you have to believe that this is the way to play the game. You have to. If you have any doubts or if you want to play the beautiful game and you want to pass the ball around and you want to think all about possession, this is not your place and it won't work. You have to buy into who we are and how we do things. And if you do, you are rewarded. We could give countless examples. And that was a little bit of even what I said to Hassan and Ethan tonight with the team is believing in the system, believing in the people, believing in the development program, believing in the way we play. And if you do that, you will succeed. and we've seen it over and over again. And Aaron, I think, has now turned into a real special player for us, one that we're very proud of.
Just my other one. Another report out of Germany yesterday said you're going to Leipzig at the end of the month.
I am not commenting on that.
So,
period.
Thanks, Jesse.
And that is the head coach of the New York Red Bulls and Jesse Marsh. And yes, there are reports that he might be moving to Red Bull Leipzig in the German Bundesliga. He says he's not going to comment on it. For now, I'm just going to leave it the way it is because I don't know what it is. But still, though, when something comes up, we'll find out. But still, though, it's a situation where, you know, look, Jesse Marsh is doing great things with the New York Red Bulls in MLS. And, you know, he's a hot name right now, not just in Europe, but, of course, you know, some people think he could take over the U.S. men's national team, you know, with Ernie Stewart now as general manager of the U.S. men's national team with that new position. So we'll see what happens. But still, it's a situation where you're just going to have to wait and see. So until then, you know, we'll wait till something big happens, what could happen. But once again, it's a situation where for the New York Red Bulls that, you know, we'll see what will go on with Mr. Marsh. But until then, he has an MLS club to manage, lead them into the Open Cup, and they are hopefully going to get back to the final. Part one of the road back to the final is done, and now they're going to take on the Philadelphia Union in the fifth round once again, and then if they do it advance to the quarterfinals, it will be back at Red Bull Arena against either DC United or Orlando City. So we'll have to wait and see what's going to happen there. So other than that, should be exciting, should be a lot of fun, and we'll take a look and see what will happen when we get there. But there you have it, and now here are the matchups for the fifth round of the 2018 Lamar Hunt U.S. Open Cup. Already announced, the Philadelphia Union have been drawn as the home team. They will take on the New York Red Bulls, and they will host that match Saturday night, June 16th, at Talon Energy Stadium, 7 o'clock Eastern Time. The other matchup in the East, the Northeast end of things, DC United will be hosting Orlando City. Whether that's going to be in Boyd's, Maryland, or somewhere else, we'll find out. In the Mideast, Atlanta United will be hosting the Chicago Fire. And as we already said, Louisville City will be hosting Nashville SC. In the Midwest, Houston Dynamo will be hosting Minnesota United FC. Sporting Kansas City, the defending Open Cup champions, they will be hosting FC Dallas. And then in the West, Los Angeles Football Club will be taking on the USL's Sacramento Republic. And then the Portland Timbers will be hosting the Los Angeles Galaxy. Now, once again, when we get to the quarterfinals, the winners of Philadelphia New York Red Bulls will host DC United, the winners of DC United Orlando City. If we get to the quarterfinals in the Mideast bracket, the winners of Atlanta United Chicago Fire will host Louisville City or Nashville. In the Midwest, the winners of Houston Dynamo, Minnesota United FC will host either Sporting Kansas City or FC Dallas. And then in the West, it will be Los Angeles FC hosting the winner of Los Angeles FC Sacramento Republic against Portland Timbers Los Angeles Galaxy. So there you have it. And then apparently what's going to happen is for the semifinals, the winners of the Northeast will take on the winners of the Mideast, and that will be a draw for the semifinal matchups, who will host the game. Also, they'll also find out in the order of who's going to host the final, depending on results happening. And then, of course, Midwest winner will be taking on the West winner, and that will also be a draw as well. So we'll have to wait and see for that to happen as well. But that's the end. We're going to end this one a little early tonight. So hope everyone has enjoyed this show. I want to thank my guests tonight. I want to thank Wes Bowling of Golden Goal Nash. I also want to thank Jeff Reuter from The Athletic in Minnesota, as well as from The Guardian. I also want to thank Guillermo Rivera from Fire Confidential, as well as The Athletic in Chicago. My name is Daniel Feuerstein. Thank you very much for joining me tonight. Don't forget to join me, regular Feuerstein's Fire American Soccer Show, this coming Tuesday night, as I will have on Peter Wilt, who is helping out with the Madison USL Division III club that's going to start playing next year as one of the founding members, and we'll get his insights on everything that's been going on. And, of course, we will have another guest. We just got to get that whole thing set up, and they'll be up on Twitter and Facebook as soon as possible. But once again, my name is Daniel Feuerstein. Thank you very much for listening to me tonight. As always, please enjoy your football. And this has been the 2018 Lamar Hunt U.S. Open Cup Round 4 Review Show. Have a good evening. Take care. Bye-bye for now. So long. And talk to you next time.